I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with a simple majority of Frankly Scarlet.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Robin Hitchcock and Liz Labaz. Abby Fudor was unavailable. Again. Abby.
We miss you, Abby.
We miss you.
Where are you, Abby?
She's busy. Lives a busy life. But let's talk about Deadpool 2.
Please. I want to say I love that you asked your all-female comedy troupe friends to talk about a super-duper teenage boy movie.
I also love that. It's just the broiest movie ever.
Hey, this isn't me virtue signaling. Like, I don't even see gender. believe me, I do. But it was like, I was just like, who's funny? This is a funny movie. Let's find some funny people.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll talk more about gender and funny and other topics this week on You Can Handle the Truth. You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, May 18th, 2018. That all sounded right. Yeah, that works. And I saw Deadpool 2, and Robin and Liz saw 85% of Deadpool 2. Sorry.
That's okay.
We also saw the outside of Southside Work Cinema, which is not where Deadpool 2 was playing.
I saw the inside, and I walked in, and I said, "Where's the screening?" And the guy said, "What?"
Yeah.
And I said, "My friend Sean Collier invited me to a screening of Deadpool 2, and he said, that comes out next week."
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But we did get to have a very, like, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles adventure of, like, I jumped out of my Lyft and into Robin's car, and we raced down
a fruit truck backed up, and we couldn't go down a one-way street.
That is 100% accurate.
Wait, a literal fruit truck?
It wasn't a fruit truck, but okay. It was a truck.
It was like a moving truck or an excess waste truck.
It's a fruit truck in our memories.
And your hearts.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. I sent them to the wrong theater. Screenings are weird, guys. Sometimes they're one place, sometimes another place. And so they missed a shocking amount of setup and yet still came in during the opening credits.
Yeah.
If you thought you hadn't missed much, no, you did.
I would have, if Sean hadn't leaned over and explained what we missed, I would have thought we missed nothing.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you don't need to show up for Deadpool 2 on time. First tip.
No, I think you probably should.
No, yeah. Actually, you absolutely need to.
There are huge swaths of that movie that would have made no sense if Sean had not explained a key plot point.
Yeah, it is. Okay, let's. I'm putting a pin in that.
Cool.
First, tell me your experiences with Deadpool the first.
Oh, so I actually just watched it for the first time last week.
Ah.
Because it was one of those things where it's like, back at the box. Because the first time I tried to watch Deadpool was with my former boss, and he had gotten some bad whiskey. And he's like, "You like whiskey? Come over and drink some of this whiskey." And he kept refilling my glass. And so I fell asleep during the first big fight on the overpass, which I realize has like a lot of breaks in it, but before that scene was over, I was down for the count.
Yeah.
I watched it, I think, in theaters originally, and maybe once since it has come out, but my memory of it is much more distant than yours. I liked it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I am in general a fan of fourth wall breaking humor.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Even in my own comedy, I feel like I have to really put the reins on that.
Please don't ever put the reins on that.
No.
Okay. Thank you for that permission slip signed by Robin Hitchcock
yeah.
to write more of that into my comedy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just remember coming out of it and being like, that was a good time.
Yeah.
What fun.
It's a very, I thought it was a very good time. I think part of, Robin, you said you weren't as much of a fan of the first one.
So I said that I liked this one better.
Okay.
But I am acknowledging that it might have been because I saw it in a theater packed full of nerds.
Right.
Whereas watching it by myself on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
After knowing that people really like it, I was like, that was good.
Yeah.
I certainly have nothing really to criticize the film for other than being 100% for 16-year-old boys.
Mm-hmm.
But 16-year-old boys are people, too.
And sure.
They
used to be the most important people.
Right.
Now
so
they, and in many ways, they still are.
I have an internal 16-year-old boy, like many of us in America
right.
do. And so
right.
I enjoyed the movie plenty, but I had a better time watching this one.
I think, and Liz, confirm or deny, I think that... I think that coming to the original Deadpool now might have lost a little bit of punch because Marvel proper, Marvel core, the MCU, internalized Deadpool's lessons very quickly. Like they very, you know, with Thor Ragnarok being the best example. Like, there was a lot of like, oh, we're supposed to be funny and poke fun at ourselves. Okay, here we go in Marvel post the first Deadpool, where for me, watching the first Deadpool in the theater did feel like, good, someone's deconstructing this a bit.
I don't know if I felt like Thor Ragnarok was deconstructing so much as lighthearted.
Sure.
Yeah, like, Deadpool feels like very much a deconstruction.
Right.
It is poking fun of itself, the genre, other titles,
mm-hmm.
Other universes. Like, there are no walls.
Action movies in general.
Right. Whereas Thor Ragnarok, I think, was, and sort of the movies that came after, definitely internalized the lightheartedness
mm-hmm.
lessons that Deadpool taught, but I didn't feel like it was nearly as referential or deconstructive, is a great word to use.
Yeah. In any case, the first one was good. Here's another. And I will disagree, and I liked Deadpool 2. I enjoyed it. I will gladly see it again in the inevitable. My girlfriend didn't see it with me the first time, so here I go. And I will have no problem at all taking that trip. That said, I think there might have just been a little too much darkness and grit and stakes in a movie that I fundamentally want to be 30% action romp and 70% pure comedy.
So I actually did have a moment of that
mm-hmm.
in the first one when he's being tortured into becoming Deadpool.
Yeah.
I was like, this is too much.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally see what you're saying. I mm-hmm. think that the audience that loves Deadpool is okay with that, though.
Apparently.
The first one I felt like was definitely R-rated dark, but was not as like Dark Knight of the Soul dark.
Yeah.
Even though there was torture in it, which is a weird line to draw. But this one was a lot more sad, maybe, than the first one.
And a lot of that comes down to Cable. And
mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, in the small amount of comics that I read that Cable appeared in when I was in college and read comics,
mm-hmm.
he was, you know, ridiculously dark and gritty because that's when he came to be, and I felt like this movie did a decent job of making fun of his dark and grittiness.
Yes. I mean, Cable is essentially like a goth boy pulled out of the 1990s who I would have had a crush on.
I mean, do you now?
No, because I've grown as a person.
Where do you both fall on the crushes on Thanos argument?
Gross.
Gross.
That's a thing. That is an internet
thing. I know, and it's
thing.
Gross. I'm really upset. I've seen that picture of his butt. I don't like it.
Okay.
No, there's a picture of his butt? Sorry. God.
Anyway.
What is wrong with you, internet?
We'll be here all night if we start to go down that road. But I have a Deadpool DVD thoughtfully sent by the hilariously ineffective Deadpool Awards campaign from when it came out. And so I've looked at some of the scenes that were cut, and the scenes that were cut from the first one were more dark stuff. Like, there was an additional 10 minutes of him trying to cure his cancer and, like, going to Mexico to try to get an experimental treatment, discovering that the doctors there were defrauding people, and then him just killing an entire, you know, charlatan medical center full of fake doctors. And clearly, the people behind Deadpool, by which I mean Ryan Reynolds and Ryan Reynolds alone, want to get into the heavy side of this character. I'm not sure I like that.
Yeah. Like, Ryan Reynolds, friend.
Yeah.
Like, let this movie franchise be the doorway for your Oscar bait movie. I hope you get it.
Yeah.
This is not it.
Yeah.
Don't try and make it. Just a little piece of friendly advice.
Not everyone needs an Oscar, Ryan Reynolds.
No.
I don't think you're going to get one, so relax.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim Carrey is still angry.
Poor Jim Carrey.
I feel like that's when it... I feel like something snapped in him. I feel like he's like, I'm going to go get an Oscar now, please and thank you, and he didn't get it, and it's been all downhill from
there.
Isn't
the documentary Jim and Andy basically, like, that's the thesis of it?
I don't know, I haven't watched it.
Playing Andy Kaufman in Man on the Moon is what broke his brain, and that was Oscar bait.
I don't think it was, well, yeah, I should watch the documentary and find the real answer to my
question. It's on Netflix.
I feel like he, did you ever see The Majestic?
Unfortunately, yes.
Where it's like, I'm gonna try again, and it's like he just didn't get it, and it's just been getting a little weirder every year since for him. I don't want that for Ryan Reynolds because he's delightful. We all like him.
Yeah. I still remember Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place fondly,
forever.
Adventureland. I love Adventureland.
I actually haven't seen that one, did not know that Ryan Reynolds was in it.
He absolutely is. He's like the douchey but super cool guy who's like 5 years older than everybody else, so he sleeps with whoever he wants, even though he's
nice.
Like clearly truly a loser. But
I have seen Adventureland, and I 100% thought you were talking about Adventure Time. I was like, I didn't know he was in Adventure Time.
But you
the
can
cartoon
picture.
That he has a watch from?
Yeah.
That's so precious.
He's not in it. I'm just being dumb.
Well, what's the point again? The point is if you just want pure fun, there is more weight, there is more heavy stretches in Deadpool 2 than you might like and than I would have preferred.
Yes. I think they are pretty good about giving you comedic breaks and giving you breathers.
And some of the comedic breaks are dark, which I think makes the actually dark things that happen that aren't comedic easier to swallow.
That always bugs me. It's like, you gotta be serious about all the talking around the spoilers. You gotta be, you have to be serious about all the serious stuff, or else none of the serious stuff.
Right. And again, talking around the spoilers, I think that I might have liked this movie less if I had seen the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
Thanks, Sean.
Yeah, hey, that's why I was helping. I knew, yeah.
But I did want to say, like, my bar for me definitely enjoying this movie is that I will go see it again to see the first 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. That's a ringing endorsement, I think.
And also because I know that Colin will like it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I thought Josh Brolin, right, did a good job as Cable.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Robin, explain the thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes we prepare.
Cable's backstory in the film involves his wife and daughter being burnt up by a supervillain.
Yeah.
That's why he has gone back in time to stop said supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
And as you may know, women and children, usually children, being killed to motivate the hero or anti-hero in this case, is an incredibly overplayed cliche and is sexist, and we hate it.
In almost every medium, but specifically in comics. And there is a specific term for that, and it's called fridging.
Yes, which comes from Gail Simone, who is a wonderful comic book writer, made a website called Women in Refrigerators, because one of the Green Lanterns, I think Kyle Rayner was the character's name, his girlfriend was literally killed and left in his fridge to find. And so she made a list of all of the women who had been killed to motivate male characters in comics. And it's a long list.
Yeah. And so for a movie that is, I mean, it's like bread and butter is knowing winking references. It does not make that reference.
It doesn't say anything about women in refrigerators or fridging. It talks about a comic book artist not being able to draw feet, which got a big laugh from 7 comic book nerds in the audience.
It did.
I feel like fridging has reached the major discourse, at least among women, but I guess this movie doesn't super care about what women think.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so even though I was like, I like this movie and I'll see it again, I am genuinely furious that they did not name check Gail Simone or at least the concept of fridging.
And the fridging trope really, really bothers me.
It's terrible.
At this point, the two things that I automatically reject, particularly in action movies or comic book movies, are fridging or just a straight damsel in distress plot. And I feel like people more know that a straight damsel in distress plot is problematic. Like, I feel like the average moviegoer has started to recognize that as played, as at least overplayed, even if they don't admit that it's deeply problematic, which it certainly is.
I mean, they had that in Deadpool the 1.
Right.
And I don't think that they made reference to it. They did have her fight her way out, which I enjoyed.
Yeah. I think that fridging is as bad or worse.
I think it's worse.
Because it's very much like, you know, there's a couple of jokes in this movie about instances of lazy writing, which are always hilarious and are always perfectly timed and really delivered and a nice comment on the way that comic book movies get out of problems. Mm-hmm. But there's no lazier writing than I'm sad because my loved ones are dead.
Right. And all they could have at least, if they weren't going to unlazy their writing, they could have at least acknowledged it, which they do in several other instances. But they were just like, no, this writing, this is the good stuff.
Yeah. This is the part you have to take seriously.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is the last point I'll make on it, and then I will allow you to make any further points you please. But the last point I would make on it is calling yourself out on your bullshit a lot of the time doesn't forgive all of your bullshit automatically. It just, you know, forgives what you have acknowledged and deconstructed.
Exactly.
Like the fact that you're self-referential and make smart commentary on a lot of things and on a lot of tropes, if anything, as you're saying, makes it more like, hey, wait, what? When you're playing into even bigger tropes that you do not comment on, right?
Yeah, like, let me be clear. The better choice would be to not do it.
Right, right.
But if you're going to do it, I think maybe acknowledge it so that the people who are watching could at least learn a lesson of like, oh, yeah, that is bad lazy writing. And for the next time we're going to try to do better next time. Maybe we're Deadpool. Ha ha, we're so charming.
Yeah.
I would have preferred that they found a different route to give Cable a backstory. But if they were going to go this very tropey route, I would have at least appreciated a wink of like, we know.
By the way, no spoilers at all. If you haven't seen the movie yet, this is all I'll say. You'll understand more why we're spending this much time on it after you see the movie.
Yeah,
correct.
That's the only way I can clear this up without.
Yes.
Yeah. All of that said, I had a really good time and laughed a whole lot.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. I mean, my God, if I couldn't enjoy movies that I had some feminist criticism for, I would enjoy no movies.
I would stop watching movies, and God forbid.
Yeah, I love movies.
Robin, talk about the director, because you uniquely are poised to care.
It's David Leitch, he's one of the co-directors of John Wick, and directed Atomic Blonde, I believe. This movie also shares 2 cast members with Atomic Blonde.
Yeah.
And it is, he has coherent action. That is what he does.
Yeah.
And the action in this movie is significantly more coherent than Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was watching Deadpool, I was like, boy, a lot of stuff sure is being thrown around and falling.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, it has some really solid action set pieces in it.
Yeah, I thought the action sequences were really fun. They were fast-paced, but he's very good at not doing too many cuts, which is basically what John Wick is famous for.
Right.
And so I appreciated that. I mean, this was a little bit more because, you know, it's a superhero movie and there are CGI bits to do, but it was not quite the hard-hitting realness of John Wick, but it was...
At one point, Cable shoots somebody in the stomach, and I'm like, well, he doesn't watch John Wick, because then he would know to do the second shot in the head. It doesn't come back to bite him in the ass, though. No. I also wanted to say that even though there were coherent action sequences, it did kind of have that, like, Matrix 2 feeling, where it was like, I need a break.
Yeah.
There were definitely, like, 6 or 7 action sequences in a row, and I was like, can we just sit and talk for a few minutes?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a character that is involved, and I don't even know if we can spoil it, but they make for such great action sequences.
The big one?
No. The new part of the team.
Oh.
Everybody knows Domino's in this movie.
So Domino being in the team is basically like having Final Destination be a superhero.
Yeah,
on
I love
your
that.
Team.
I love that so
it's
much.
It's so good.
It was amazing. And also, what's her name?
Zazie Beetz.
So cool.
Best name ever.
Best friend.
She was great. Is she getting a movie? Because she needs a movie.
I don't know. So she's on Atlanta. That was, I said, she's on some show that everybody watches, but I don't watch. That show is Atlanta.
Yes.
I thought you told me that a Domino movie was in development or a Domino
something. I told you that Gail Simone is currently writing Domino, adding insult to injury. Writing the comic. You might have interpreted that
comic.
As the film.
I did interpret it as the film.
Okay.
I would very much like to see a Domino movie.
I would watch the every living second out of that.
I hate origin stories, and I would watch a Domino origin story.
Same.
Yeah.
I would watch a origin story, heist film.
Yeah.
I would watch Domino Goes to Kennywood.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bringing it back to Adventureland. Which is to say... the cast is good. The people coming back are good. The new people are good. It's a good... It works.
Is there anyone we didn't like? Any casting?
No.
Yeah, I can't really think of anybody that I was like, meh.
I will say that I am kind of meh about the, you know, real bad guy who barely talks. Mostly because he was a boring bad guy in Hancock and I'm still mad at him.
What has he been in more recently?
Atomic Blonde.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. He's whatever.
Eddie Marsan is his name.
Yeah. He's a generic. He is somehow one of those people that is both generic looking and really, really odd looking.
Yes.
It's like your oddness will fade into the background.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is sort of his jam.
He looks like a Far Side drawing.
Oh my God. That is the best description of a human ever.
But he kind of, anyway.
He does.
So.
He's going to try and open a door the wrong way.
He's going to. Yeah. So, we're going to rate it, and then we're going to talk about Infinity War. And here's your first warning of many, that the following Infinity War conversation will be a spoiler conversation. We're going to spoil everything. I don't know how anyone is left unspoiled. The movie has made $1.5 billion. You've all seen it 4 times. If there's anyone in the cross section, if, I don't know, you put on the podcast and then you went and started painting and it will take you 3 minutes to go and stop the podcast, start that process now. In a few minutes, we're going to be spoiling of Infinity War. I'll have additional caveats then. But before we get there, a rating for Deadpool 2, please.
This is out of 10, right?
Yeah.
Probably like a 7?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a solid 7.
It's 7s across the board. Take it to the slot machine.
I think that if you like Deadpool, you will like Deadpool 2, and most people like Deadpool.
Yeah, I think you might like Deadpool 2 a sconch less.
A sconch more if you're Robin Hitchcock.
Yeah,
that's right. But most people did not have my experience.
Yeah.
I think I liked them about equally.
What it loses in delightful surprise and freshness, it gains in hitting the one-liners and references even more precisely, yeah. I think.
Ryan Reynolds got a writing credit on this one.
Okay.
You know, I will say, I think the addition of Domino maybe makes me like this better than the previous one.
Ah, that's
also
fair.
That.
She really, hit a sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
And she's in it more than Teenage Negasonic Warhead was last time, so.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Girl power.
Yes. Yeah, go see it if you'd like. Sure. Have a good time. That's Deadpool 2. Okay. And
no one has ever said, have a good time, more laissez-faire than you just said it. Ever.
Yeah, whatever. Enjoy.
Have a good time.
Yeah, enjoy
have
your life.
Have a good time.
Yeah.
If you want. I won't insist.
It's because I'm often disillusioned by how much of movie reviewing, not film criticism, but movie reviewing boils down to, listen, if you want to see the movie, see the movie.
Sure.
That's
yes.
That's fundamentally the best advice.
Right.
Some movies are, if you want to see the movie, no, don't. It's that bad. Others are, yeah. If you don't want to see the movie, see it anyway. It's that good. Most of them, if you want to go.
There is a bell curve to almost all things, Sean.
Right. That's true. That's true. Anyway, okay. And I should note that we are running out of battery. So, one, we will make this brief. Two, if it cuts off, that is the universe punishing us for dwelling on Infinity War too much. Something that we all could learn from. That little stroke of fate. But, Robin, you were here to talk to me about Infinity War at the time.
Yes.
I was in a place.
You feel better about it now?
I do.
Okay, I also like it more than I did when we first recorded.
Yeah.
I saw it a second time in IMAX, which, if you have the opportunity to do that, I think it is worth it.
Yeah.
And it felt more cohesive the
yes.
second time. I think that it's one of those things where knowing where it's all going, you see all the pieces
yeah.
coming together. And also, I allowed myself to get more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
The first time, I was very shocked.
Oh, I'm sorry. One more time. Spoiler, 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 spoiler. They're beginning. The spoilers are beginning. Go listen to Guys We Fucked if you don't want spoilers. Okay, continue.
So the first time I was very shocked, and I was also dealing emotionally with the fact that I was going to be carrying this knowledge around for 2 days,
right.
as we discussed on the prior podcast.
Very difficult.
But once everyone knew, I allowed myself to get emotional about it.
Yeah.
I wish I had been able to see it twice before now discussing it. I liked it very much on first review. It was very emotional, although there were some of the... I don't have to talk around spoilers. So the dusting, which
yeah.
is
yeah.
what we can now speak about. The breadth of the dusting ultimately was so much that it kind of took me out of it
mm-hmm.
and made me realize, like, this is not going to have lasting effects.
As soon as Black Panther dies, you're
right.
like, okay, they will be undoing this.
Right.
That is, in fact, that is the actual moment that I went, okay, cool.
Yeah.
The Spider-Man moment was the one dusting that I went like, oh, I don't care if you come back. That, like, even though this doesn't have lasting consequences, that one emotional moment had true, like, it hit me.
Yeah.
Because he is a baby child.
He's yeah. a child and he's begging for his life. I can't handle it.
He's a child. He's begging for his life. He is away
He's begging
from
for his life to the father figure he never had, who in turn...
Who dragged him away from his actual family.
Dragged him away from his actual family.
Uncaring for the fact that he is an actual child.
And the
Liz
last...
does not care for Tony Stark's pain.
Tony Stark is a monster, and he is the real villain of the MCU.
All right, fine.
I like Tony, and I felt bad for him too, but mostly felt bad for Peter. I will say...
Until this movie, where Star-Lord has just become the big bad of the universe,
sure.
but anyway, go on.
So here's the thing. I don't really care for the Guardians movies, which I think I mentioned in the
yeah.
other podcast, and so I was not surprised or upset at Star-Lord being a jackhole who ends the universe through his own jackholeness. So I didn't really feel betrayed by that at all.
All right.
Oh, I did want to say that when I saw it the second time, there was like a 8-year-old boy in a Spider-Man costume walking into the theater. And I was like, I can't handle this. And I
yeah.
needed to text someone. And so I texted Abby and Liz. But I also was like really nervous about the people sitting next to me in the theater seeing it. So I was like texting within my hand screen. Yeah.
I texted you on the way, Robin, on the way into the theater because I was with Mary Beth. And I was like, she has no idea what's about to happen. Like, she is in pure, like, this is going to be a great, fun adventure. And I'm like, I know where she's, I know what's about to happen to
her. I saw her on the street the next day, and I was like, are you okay? And she said, I am not.
Did it feel a little bit like you were bringing, like, a kitten to the pound? Like,
a little bit.
Like, they just don't know what you're about to do, and they're so trusting. Gosh.
And like, you can't. Like, the only thing I felt safe saying was, like, man, it was pretty heavy. But, like, that doesn't...
No.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, without actually spoiling it, you cannot prepare people for what it is.
Well, and here's what happened to me. If you listen to the Infinity War podcast, it is me bitching for 30 minutes while Robin goes, okay, maybe it's fine, though.
And honestly, I feel like I would have more forcefully argued, but I was so upset about spoiling people. It's hard to talk about without spoiling people.
Challenge. I heard you two talk about how horrible you were and how judgmental long before I actually made it through the podcast, because it takes me a while to listen to podcasts.
Sure.
You were much more reasonable than you gave yourself credit for.
Okay.
Like, it was not that crazy of an argument.
In the same way that Sean says, have fun if you want, he also says, I had issues with this movie and feels it more strongly than it sounds from his voice.
Okay. Right. And what I was going through, I think, was, especially with last year. Last year was Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, more or less three comedies.
Right.
And, of course, we did just get Black Panther, but Black Panther felt like such an...
epic scale.
Yeah, and a standalone thing. Like now it's less Black Panther as part of the MCU, and now this is another Titanic thing. Titanic, get it? That is merging with Marvel, right?
Yes.
So I really felt like Marvel, that's where I go for fun comic times. And when I walked out and I had gone through that... It was like, I think I was more than anything just responding to, man, this is not what I was saddling up for today. But then later that day, because we saw it was early in the afternoon, wasn't it? Didn't we see it like 1 p.m.?
Correct, we saw it at 1 p.m.
So as the day went on, I couldn't stop thinking about Spider-Man. And I couldn't stop thinking about him begging for his life. And I know you hate Tony, but Tony having to sit there and watch it when all Tony's been trying to do for 2.5 movies is keep him corralled so that this doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And Rocket...
Challenge, but...
Yeah. Rocket watching Groot die again.
Did you read James Gunn's tweet?
Yes.
Yes. Why?
If you missed this, if you've been spared from this...
We're not going to tell you.
No, I'm going to tell them because they
oh
need to
God.
Go through it too.
You're so mean.
Every time Groot says, I am Groot, there's an actual line written in the script. And the actual line there is dad.
Talking
it's
a rocket.
It's,
I wish you could see me and Robin's faces right now as Sean told you, the listening audience.
It's like I just told. Fact. It's like I just told 2 9-year-olds there will never be ice cream again.
No, we both knew it, but we're just empathizing with you, the audience, if you didn't know.
I hope everyone already.
Me too.
And the Black Panther moment, and Cap watching Bucky when they just got back. That's what was sitting with me for the rest of the day, and by the time I went to bed, I was like, oh, that was a really good movie. Yeah.
When Cap goes over to, like, the dust pile and just runs his fingers through it, and that's, I think, Bucky's the first one to turn into ashes.
Yes.
So, the impact on the living people is what really had the emotional impact. The loss of the dusted, for me, other than Spider-Man, wasn't so much because I was like, well, they're coming back, right? But I also can put myself into the minds of those characters and go, like, they don't know that, right? Like, they don't know they're part of the cinematic universe.
Right.
And...
Don't they? No, they don't.
No, well,
Deadpool does.
Does. But like the grief, right? This like worldwide grief was very impactful. And so what I loved about this movie is that yes, Marvel is where I go to have a good time. But at the same time, stories that are just a good time at the end of the day eventually start to feel a little bit like, oh, like, well, was this a waste of time? Or
sure.
They've been doing this for so long that this movie being so sad and so, like, grief-stricken felt earned, right? There's been a lot of comparisons between the DCU and the MCU, and, like, the DCU is so dark and it's just unending misery and blah, like, it's just a slog. And part of it is that they never earned that sadness and that darkness because they never made you care about any of those characters. Like,
except for Wonder Woman.
Well, that's true. I almost consider Wonder Woman separate from that universe, which is not fair, but, like, I do.
Yeah.
But part of it is that they earn you caring about her by showing you this, like, joyful part of her first. You have to kind of make audiences invest and like people, and it's much easier to do that when things are fun and light. like you could get into a whole bit about like relationship philosophy in this conversation, but like we have all thrown our anchors into the MCU.
Yeah.
And now we care about almost all of these characters, except for Tony Stark.
I care about Tony Stark,
who is a monster.
I'm still Team Cap, though.
But like, this movie was earned. Right?
Yeah.
They have been working for over a decade to make us care about these characters, and so when it went dark, yes, I walked out of there feeling differently than I have in any other Marvel movie. I was not like, "Woohoo, that was a good time." But that's okay.
Yeah.
Also, it wasn't all sadness. Like, it does obviously start with sadness and death, but they don't spend 2.5 hours on sadness and death the way that, like, Batman versus Superman did.
No, there are still, we said on the episode, there are still, why is Gamora? There are still, there are still moments of genuine humor and joy in there.
Yeah, there's mirth and fun and respite.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm basically here to disavow the previous podcast.
I think that that is good. I'm glad that you're not going to spend the rest of your life being mad that everyone else liked Infinity War.
Yeah.
I'm glad you were able to go through this emotional journey with us, Sean.
It would really be a shame if someone hated a movie from a iconic franchise for reasons that are not really drawn out in the text, and then perhaps just got more and more bitter when they found that other people around them enjoyed that thing much more than they did.
That I would like porgs.
Thank you.